Can I say something? I can. And I will. The question is, can you hear me? Can I not step on that while I'm talking? Are we okay? Are we good to go? Are we not good to go? Okay. We're working through Proverbs, the book of Proverbs. This is the second message after Eric's opening message last week. And we're just going to kind of continue on one of the themes that he started talking about and go into a little bit more of what that's all about. Enticements and kind of the traps of what's going on. And so I'm going to read Proverbs 1, 8 through 19, and it's kind of the warning that comes immediately. It's interesting to me that they describe what wisdom is and then immediately talk about, and now be careful. And so Proverbs 1, 8 through 19 says, "Listen, my son, to your father's instructions. Do not forsake your mother's teaching. They will be a garland to grace your head and a chain to adorn your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, do not give in to them. If they say, 'Come along with us, let's lie in wait for someone's blood, let's waylay some harmless soul, let's swallow them alive like the grave and whole like those who go down to the pit,' we will get all sorts of valuable things and fill our houses with plunder. Throw in your lot with us and we will share a common purse. My son, do not go along with them. Do not set foot on their paths, for their feet rush into sin. They are swift to shed blood. How useless to spread a net in full view of all the birds. These men lie in wait for their own blood. They waylay only themselves. Such is the end of all who go after ill-gotten gain. It takes away the lives of those who get it." I love when someone sets a trap and it springs right back on them. And we were at a swimming pool once when I was a kid, and there was this kid that was kind of a guy we liked to pick on because he always took everything so hard. And he came to the pool, and we were at the pool. None of us were in our swim trunks. We were all hadn't changed yet. And he's walking along the pool, and my buddies and I say, "Let's throw him in. Let's give him the rush right now. Throw him in with all his clothes on. He's going to be mad. It's going to be great." And I have to admit, it was my idea. And so he just meandering down, and we all rush out there, and the deck of the pool is slippery, and we all go slipping and sliding. Everybody misses him. We all end up in the pool, and he's looking at us like, "What in the world did you do?" And so there are four of us in the pool, and he's standing there unscathed and looking like confused. And that was that great moment in time when actually he didn't even get the idea, the fact that the trap that we had set for him had sprung on us. And I think we need to, as we look at this passage, kind of remember that trap that we often set, that way of looking to get what we want, to get what we desire, the demands that we make, as we set the schemes to get that, they often come back and bite us and hurt us. And then you're in the swimming pool and your wallet's wet and all your clothes are wet and your shoes are wet and they squeak and your mother asks you what happened and you have to explain. But anyway, that's the kind of thing that happens when you don't follow the way of wisdom. So the first part of this thing is kind of what Eric started talking about last week, which is that the idea of looking for the easy way. Looking for the fun way, looking for the easy way. We want wisdom, I think most of us in the room, on our better days, would desire wisdom. We would want to be wise, we would want to be considered wise, but we don't want to do all the work that it takes to get to be wise. As I've often said, I want to be a great guitar player. I do not want to take guitar lessons. I don't want to practice. I just want to be a great guitar player. Somewhere along the line, I finally figured out I am never going to be a great guitar player because I don't take lessons. I don't practice. I don't memorize chords. There are no calluses on the tips of these fingers. It's not going to happen. Now, we have that idea that somehow I can get that, you know, if I'm just going to, and we kind of get mad because we think some people are sort of naturally gifted. They may be kind of tuned into music, but the truth is, it's just a lot of practice. It's a lot of work, and you sound really awful for a long time, and then pretty soon you start sounding like the guitar players at the Village that are good. And it takes time and practice. So the first thing to do is that we have to start to listen. And if you flip my screen here, we have to listen to Dad and listen to Mom. It says, listen to your father's instruction. Do not forsake your mother's teaching. They will be a garland to grace your head and a chain to adorn your neck. Listening to God. I want to begin by making sure that you know that this is presuming something. This is presuming that your dad is a worshiper of God and that he's chosen, or not chosen, the foolish path, but has actually chosen the way of wisdom himself. So if your dad isn't that, then remember what we said last week, that the very beginning of wisdom is what? Fear of God, right? So if you don't fear God, then you haven't even taken the beginning step of wisdom. That doesn't mean you don't have some wise things to say or some smart things to say on occasion. But the presumption here is that Dad is a worshiper of God, a follower of God, knows God. And by the way, for those of you who have good, godly fathers, which I'm not sure there are too many in this room, yeah, all five of you, but and I'll preach to the five of you also. Those of you who have experienced that and who know that, and I certainly had one of those godly dads, I still draw on the wisdom that my dad offered me, the things that he said, the way of being, the way of living, how to be generous, how to be kind, how to be merciful, how to do things for God's glory and not your own. All those things that God, you know, I like sometimes say, well, God taught me that. But really, it's the voice of my dad that says those things to me because he taught me wisely. But there's a cool thing about what dads do, and it's called instruction. And instruction really has the whole sense of discipline to it, which is really the ugly word, right? Because the bad news about wisdom is it comes through discipline. Discipline is what we hate. I don't want to practice the guitar because I don't like the discipline of practicing the guitar. I want to go from the beginning to the end. But instruction, which often comes through our father, is discipline, and discipline equals spanking. Basically, the word that's used there is sort of that it's got violence attached. It's got spanking attached. It's got, spare the rod, spoil the child, that concept of biblical authority. Now, again, we're not talking about someone who's abusive and beats us to within an inch of our lives. That's not discipline. This is someone who spanks us. I love parents who spank their children, and I always love watching how that all works out, right? Eric and Sue and I, we were over at Tom Mary Kay's for dinner one night, and this is when Ashton was little, and I said, hi, Ashton, and she turned her head and wouldn't talk to me, and so they kind of corrected her and said, Rod's talking to you, and you need to respond to him, and she wouldn't do it, and so Sue finally said, I'm going to have to correct you if you don't, and correct was a magic word in their family, and still is, and it's not a word with great connotation. It means that we're going to take you in the other room, and we're going to, spank your butt. And so it didn't matter. She wasn't going to talk, so they took her off into the other room, spanked her butt. She came back, and they said, now you have a chance to do the right thing. And she stood there and she wouldn't talk to me, and it's like father, like daughter, you know, and except he's too big to spank, that's the problem. John, help me. And so then Eric said, you know, then Sue said, okay, Daddy's going to take you out and correct you. And that was the really magic words. And Daddy took her out and corrected her. And there were some tears and some crying. And it didn't sound like she was dying. You know, it was just, although she kind of made sure you knew that she was in horrible pain. And came back in, and here's your other chance. And then there was just, well, you know, you have a chance again to say hi to Rod, and she wouldn't do it. And they all kind of looked at each other frustrated, and the parents did, and we all kind of were like, what do we do now? And in that moment, Ashton was being very unwise. She was not listening to the instruction of her parents. And it was kind of foolish. And she had chosen the foolish path, and discipline doesn't always work, but it is the way of fathers. Good fathers discipline their children. They guide their children. It sounds like somebody's being disciplined, or maybe needs to be. You know, who knows? And so there's that whole idea of discipline, spanking. There's some pain involved. And that's kind of how the path of wisdom is. When you pursue wisdom, it's painful. It requires you to be disciplined and instructed. This is how it works. This is how it's going to be. You don't have to agree with me. You don't have to like it. You don't have to love it. You don't have to say, oh, this is wonderful and delightful, and I'm just so pleased and happy. You just have to do it. You just have to, this is the way. This is what you need to do. Do it. We're not asking you. We're not, it's not negotiation. It's not up for debate. I remember my dad saying, was there something about what I just said that you thought invited a debate? You know? Oh, I'm sorry. No, apparently not, you know. So that there was this idea that fathers, dad, simply instructed you and told you what to do, and then you did it. It was an act of obedience and submission. Don't you hate that word? Submission, obedience. Those are the words that we kick against, but those are what godly dads do. That's what God calls us to. That's this next step in doing the right thing. Is instruction equals discipline equals spanking. Listen to mom for teaching. Again, here's a huge presumption. Presuming she is a worshiper of God and that she has not chosen the foolish path, okay? Teaching equals law, Torah. It's not just the law itself, but the Torah, all the explanations of the law, all the intricacies of the law, all the realities of the law. And it kind of boils down to manners. It kind of boils down to how are you going to live your life? You know, how are you going to be in social situations? How are you going to be in social settings? How are you going to be with people? Moms have great influence in that whole area of teaching us just how to be, how to use the right fork, you know, at dinner. And not that some moms know, but apparently there's the right fork and then there's the wrong fork. And how to, jump up after dinner and pick up the dishes and go, nowadays, rinse them out and put them in the dishwasher, and by day, wash them and dry them and put them up in the cupboard. And you kind of learned all those things from mom. Mom was sort of the one who taught you how to live within the basic rules, the basic guidelines of life. Wise living was to take the commandments, to take the rules, to take the laws. And by the way, when we're talking about Torah and we're talking about the explanation of the law, it's rather expansive, okay? So there's a lot of rules and sub-rules. And I was just watching some TV show whose name I can't ever remember. And they were observing a couple that were preparing for Passover, and it's kind of a whole family event, right, where they have to get all the leaven out of the house. And so they're vacuuming, and they're cleaning, and they're putting tinfoil over things that, you know, so that everything will be kosher and be correct and be right. And and they're bringing out dishes that they only use, and pots and pans that they only use to make the Passover meal. And it was this huge thing. And, you know, there's this tiny little kid, and he's like putting socks in a drawer. And, you know, like he's like, I've got this job I got to do too. It was like a whole family event. And I noticed that the dad was kind of just kind of standing there looking and observing it all. And the mom was saying, now you do this, now you do this, now we got to go get this. And then she'd send the husband, her husband, out on errands, you know, now you got to go get the big box. And it was kind of like the moms knew all the stuff that had to be done. And that's kind of the concept between about wisdom. Like, listen to your wise mom. Like, I have so many things and little sayings and little dumb things I do to this day because my mother said that's how it's done. Like, when you make tater tot casserole, and this is a lesson for my wife, right? You make tater tot casserole, you take hamburger, you put it on the bottom, you put it in the oven, it browns a little bit. Then you take green beans and you take mushroom soup, and I like to put a little pimento in, and then salt and pepper, and then you take the tater tots and you put them in order. And then you put the next row and the next row. Now, Kathy's idea of tater tot casserole is you just throw the tater tots on top and throw it in the oven. That's so wrong. Mom taught me how to do this, okay? And so when we have tater tot casserole and I make it, it is a beautiful sight to see, you know? And then you can cut it into nice little square pieces and serve your guests. It is awesome, okay? It's the way tater tot casserole is supposed to be. But apparently Kathy's mother never taught her that. And so, and maybe that's, you know, she's a godly woman, so maybe she just missed that day in class or whatever, but in mom class. But moms have this way of teaching us how to do things, and we just do them that way. And we really don't even know why anymore, because the explanation's all long lost. But there's a way to do things. And that's kind of what we're talking about when we talk about the right way, that we're listening to dad and mom. And when it comes to wisdom, we're dependent on listening to the discipline, the instruction, the just do it, I don't have to explain why, that's the way it is, and the teaching, the manners, the way of existing, just the way of being. So those are the right way. And now if you'll flip my screen. And the reward of that is that you get a garland and you get chains. Garland is all about status. It's all about, like when you're the victor in an athletic contest, you're a victor in war, you win the battle, the general comes back, they throw garlands over him, garlands of flowers, the person goes out and wins the race, and they wear garlands, and it's a sign that they have status and position, that they're recognized and acknowledged as somebody who's succeeded, who's done what's good. And then chains have the image of authority. So if you're a government official or an ambassador, you would wear chains around your neck. And so as you're walking down the street, people go, oh, that's the governor. Oh, that's the ambassador. Oh, that's somebody important. You know, I'm not sure what the modern day equivalent of that. It's probably, you know, a black Lincoln Navigators or something that you're riding in if you're famous. You know, like there's that kind of, there's something today about, you know, that you'll receive status and you'll have authority. In other words, the end result of this wisdom is that you'll actually have those things that many of us long for, the idea to be noticed, the idea to be recognized, the idea of being loved and cherished and looked up to, except it will come in the right way. It's at the end of this disciplined way of thinking, this disciplined way of being. So there's this idea inherent in this, that this is the right way, and then we have this other way. So if you'll flip my screen. Again, still. But there's these enticements that come, and the enticement is to do it quickly. The enticement is to get everything that I want and get it now. I know that no one in the village relates to this at all. This is just a lost concept on us. But there's this idea that instead of waiting, instead of being patient, instead of letting it come, I want it all now. I should have glory now. I should have position and status and riches and all the things I want, and I should have them now. Friday, Kathy had the day off, and so we just kind of goofed off, and we went up to the Street of Dreams. You pay $10 a head or something, and you can go into these houses that are like $4.5 million or $5 million or $3 million, and they're all decorated to the max, and they're painted like, you know, it's just incredible. And so you kind of go up there, and it's kind of fun to listen to the conversations as you're walking through, looking at how, you know, 0.001% of the world's population lives. And we're kind of walking through there, and the conversations are, I guess I have to work a few extra shifts to afford this. And I wonder how you could, you know, how many lottery tickets I'm going to have to buy before I win something like this. And then I was kind of like, there's something in me that kind of says, boy, it would really be nice to live in that $4.2 million house with not only the state-of-the-art kitchen, but then a sous chef's kitchen behind it, so that you got your little prep cook who actually preps the food for you, so you can be the master chef at the huge stove. And, you know, like, I'm thinking, does anybody really need that? You know, but still, there's something in me that wants it, and I wouldn't mind having it like next week, you know, and you all can come visit. It's fine, and I'll have the sous chef prepare dinner for us. But the problem is, I want it now, and I don't want to do what it takes to get a $4.2 million house, because that's like a lot of work. And being a village pastor doesn't pay that well, so I'm probably going to have to save pretty hard, and I don't want to save that much, and so it's not going to happen, basically. And I'm not going to win the lottery, and then it's just all downhill from there. So the enticement is, and what Satan brings and what evil does is it comes and says, you know what, there really is an easy way. You can have all the stuff you want. There's always the appeal to our greed. And the enticements come quickly. And so the warning is, don't give in to come along with. Okay? Come along with is when you see people plotting evil, when sinners, and it talks about sinners, and it's really talking about people who are just intent on doing it quickly, getting what they want, getting it now, okay? Come along with is the deal, and it's like, just come with us. There's something really appealing to that enticement, because it takes away personal responsibility, right? If I'm in a gang of people who do stuff, like when my buddies and I were plotting to knock this guy into the pool, it was kind of cool, because, you know, he couldn't blame any one of us. He couldn't be mad at just one of us. If I wouldn't push him out, you're an idiot, and he'd bite me or whatever. But the whole gang of us. So it's like there's like safety in numbers. Have you noticed that when people start plotting evil, start wanting to do the wrong thing, that you look for like-minded people? You look for people who you can join in with. And that's why it's so important, mom's old rule of, you know, be careful who your companions are. You know, who do you hang out with? Who are you looking to? Who are you walking with? Who do you spend most time with? Matter of fact, it's a good lesson. Think about that. Who do you spend the most time with? What is their character and nature? Are they wise? Or are they enticing you to do evil? Come along with. Be part of the group. There's some safety in that. Lying in wait. One of the things is you start looking for the easy mark, right? The easy one. You don't just, like, I've noticed that when we're in a dangerous area and, you know, people have their choice of carjacking me as I'm standing next to my car, or, you know, carjacking Julie as she stands next to her car, it's likely that they're going to pick on Julie. It's just probably more likely, you know, because that 6'8", 300-pound guy, he could hurt me, you know, and so they're waiting. There's this idea of waiting until something easy comes along, and we have that desire in us to just lie and wait for the easy way, wait for the easy mark, the easy thing that we can do. Waylaying some harmless soul. That word harmless is more along the lines of somebody who is just really weak. Somebody who is weak, but who's also innocent. Who's not expecting it. Who isn't looking around. One of the things they tell you to do when you study karate is that you're always on constant alert, right? You're always aware. You're aware of your surroundings. So when you're walking down a street, you see, okay, there's a gang of really tough-looking dudes over there, so I'll cross over and walk on this side of the street, even though it's a little extra length and time in my journey. I'm going to go to this other side because that's just safer, right? I'm not going to walk in the middle of them and then, oh, hi, you know. So it's kind of the avoidance technique, and because we're conspiring to look for the easiest and the weakest mark, but also someone who's innocent, who's just unaware. The whole idea of swallowing, and the next two are about swallowing, swallowing is the ultimate, when the Bible uses that word and it talks about the grave or it talks about swallowing, it's always talking about the concept of suddenness and sudden greed, like just the huge amount of greed that's in us, the desire to just get it all at once. And so swallowing them alive, which means being so quick to destroy that it's you take them as they're unaware, and then swallowing them whole means you don't leave any witnesses. It's like all those bad guy movies where we got to kill this person because they've witnessed and they've seen our faces, and so we got to kill them and then we'll be okay because they can't identify us. So it's that whole concept of doing that, and then let's get valuable things and plunder. The whole point of this exercise is to get what we want, to fill our houses, the scripture says, to fill our houses with stuff, to get all the things we want and to get it now. And that's the point. And then also, of course, I always love this part. This is a great verse. And throw in your lot with us, right? And we'll share a common purse. Isn't that great? Like these people who are looking to destroy the weakest one, they want you to bring in your stuff, join it to the common purse, right? Okay, yeah, how's that going to work for you? Throw in your lot, we'll have a common purse. Now there's enticement there, and the enticement is you don't have to give a lot up front. By the way, for those of you who are tempted by Satan regularly, you know his trick. Okay? When you're tempted by Satan, he offers up front everything you want. It's very quick. It's called instant gratification. You got a need, I can meet your need. And we make our little vows. I will never feel like this, or I'll never be like this, or I never want this to happen again. And Satan goes, woo-hoo, okay, he listens. And then he comes to us and he says, okay, I've got the solution to your problem. You know what? You're feeling really lonely and sad, and what you really need is a woman, and I've got a woman for you, guy. You know what? Yeah, and no, you don't have to do that whole marriage thing and courting and dating, you know, none of that. You can just sleep with her and you'll feel so much better. You know, I can give you this instant high. You're feeling depressed and down. I can give you this wonderful high. It's going to feel so good. It's going to feel so great. And then, of course, what happens is you spend the rest of your life pursuing that instant high, and you never get it again. But he doesn't tell you that. He doesn't tell you that the best he offers is the very first thing you got. And if that's not enough, then you just don't have enough. So it's along that idea of, if I throw in my stuff in a common purse, if I put it all in together with everyone else's, that up front it doesn't cost me anything, and I don't know about what happens down the road. Okay, those are the enticements. Let's flip. The path to destruction. Setting foot on a crooked path. Okay? What we have to do is start recognizing what path people are on, and then what path we want to be on. The path is a crooked path. You can't see around the bend. You don't know what's coming next. And the first part of that, or the huge part of that, is choosing bad companions, right? This is, again, goes back to, be careful of the companions you choose. Where are they walking? How do you determine what people's walk is like? Well, you watch them. And you watch them very carefully. And you see the outcomes of the decisions that they make. Part of wisdom is to study each other, to be in community, to study each other in community, to look at the outcomes of life. Now, do I want my life to look like so-and-so's life? Do I want my life to look like so-and-so's life? Do I want my life to look like so-and-so? To start looking for those models of what life ought to be like, and to then to see the path that they're walking on. But it's also to be aware of the people whose the outcome of their path isn't the kind of outcome that I want. It isn't the kind of outcome that I want for my life. I don't want to see, I mean, I don't want my life to end up like some of my companions. The other part of this bad path is that there's always this compelling thing to rush, to be in a hurry. Don't you just love those deals, like people knocking your door, and if you don't buy this today, this is the last day. You know, how many sales pitches have you ever heard that if you don't buy it today, it's never going to happen again? Do you think those people don't go ring a doorbell again the next day and make the same pitch, right? You know, like it's always, I guarantee you that there's no such thing as today, if you don't do this deal, it's not going to happen. Okay? That doesn't exist. It's only rush, rush, rush. I want your money, and the best way for me to get your money is to tell you that if you don't give it to me today, then the whole deal is off. This whole special thing that you want, this thing that you desire, isn't going to happen. Okay? So there's always the rush to go down this path, and so most, anytime somebody's saying, follow me, come with me, this is the right way, this is the right way, and you got to do it now, and you got to do it in a hurry, then forget it. It is not the right one. I like this whole thing about spreading nets in plain view and hiding the whole birds thing. And it says, how useless to spread a net in full view of all the birds. Okay? These men lie in wait for their own blood, they waylay only themselves. To spread a net in full view of all the birds. When you're going to, this kind of goes back to what they were doing. They had a fowler. A fowler was someone who caught the birds that were then later either used at the temple or given or raised or used for food. And what happens is they would go spread a net. But they would spread a net where birds are, right? Where are the birds at? Well, they're out in the thicket, they're out in the forest, they're in the undergrowth, they're down in where. And so they spread their net down there where the birds actually are. Because if they, and the rule here is if you spread the net where they're not, well, A, you're not going to catch any, and B, if you spread it in such a way that the birds see the net and they become aware of the net, they go, they're not stupid. Well, they are, but they're not completely stupid, and they won't go where this net is obvious to them. So the net is hidden, and then it suddenly, you trap all these birds, and then they would take them and sell them or eat them or do whatever they had to do. So the idea of looking at the walk that leads to destruction is when you see nets, be aware of the net. Be aware of the traps. Start looking for traps. Where are the traps? How do those traps spring? How will they spring on me? How can I be aware? They're always hiding in darkness. They're always hiding in thickets. They're always, the traps are in dark places. And so if you stay on the right path, If you stay on the path, the good path, the path of wisdom, then you're not going to get trapped because you're on a path that's full of light and it's cleared. But when you start going off the path, when you go and start messing around where it's dark and in the thickets and in the dark places, that's where the nets are that catch the birds, and you become one of the birds that gets caught. So the path to destruction, just be aware of that. And if you'll flip. And the best way to do that is to see the end of the path. The whole idea that we just talked about, what happens to people who follow the wrong path is much like what happened to us when we tried to push the kid into the swimming pool. This trap springs on us. Ill-gotten gain, Scripture says, stuff that you get, the things you get that you force yourself to get, you make demands, you make it happen, it's all your power and strength, it never brings what you think it will. It doesn't bring you joy, it doesn't bring you pleasure, it doesn't bring you happiness, it doesn't bring you any of the things that it seems to promise. Ill-gotten gain destroys you. You may have money, but you will have no pleasure. You may have conquered something that you wanted to conquer, but there will be no joy in it. Because what we get in a hurry, when we're unwise, leaves us, destroys us, hurts us. So the bottom line is, there's no instant, borrowed, or stolen wisdom. So if you think that this pursuit of Proverbs is going to teach you to be wise, and you can just go read the book and not listen to the next 84 sermons that Eric and I are going to be doing on this, you're wrong. There's not instant wisdom. It doesn't come quickly. It comes slowly, patiently, over a long period of time. And it has to be earned and worked for and pursued. And if you'll flip, we're done. I thought we were. Any comments, questions, thoughts, ideas, pushbacks?
I was just curious if you could tell us a few things that your mother said.
Things. She said to pray every morning. Like, you have, don't start the day with prayer. And I get up, I can't sleep a lot, but when I wake up, I go spend time in prayer, and it's because Mom told me to pray. Pray every morning. Always pray in the morning. Don't worry about it in the afternoon, don't worry about it at night, but always pray in the morning. Start your day with God. One of those things.
Yeah, I found that when you're reaching, looking at people's lives and seeing what they like that, or feeling that, that's been my strongest argument for people who say you don't have to go to church to be a Christian. And I tell them, well, how do you, you want to follow Christ? Christ commands that you follow it. And how do you know you're doing that?
Sure, yeah, we need to be in community to do this. It's interesting because one of the scriptures, and I didn't read a lot of these, and I should have, but let's see. I have more understanding, Psalm 119, 100, and 102. I have more understanding than the elders, for I obey your precepts. I have kept my feet from every evil path so that I might obey your word. I have not departed from your laws, for you yourself have taught me. So, it is not, if we don't have that, that we do go to God and say, be my father, be my mother, teach me, show me that you yourself teach me. Now, I think God when we ask God to teach us, he always does that through giving us surrogate fathers and surrogate mothers. And I know when my father died, a very godly man came and became a father to me. And a few years ago when he passed away, it was much like losing the wise father. And I know there are some of the people here who asked me to be their dad, and it always feels a little awkward because I'm not sure how to do that. But the truth is that we are looking, God does provide wise fathers and wise mothers in community for us when we are in that community. Good question.
I thought the whole picture of the people laying waste and kind of this whole kind of trapping people and taking advantage of people. I mean, I never, maybe a few of us have been here, but I've never been in a place where someone says, hey, there's some modest person. But it's a really interesting metaphor for the way I tend to, I think in my own life, sort of just try to position myself in places with other people to get approval or easily. Even just more, it's kind of an ugly picture of what I do very seldom.
Exactly. And yeah, I was going to mention that this is you're absolutely right. That's absolutely right. That we often do this subtly. If somebody just said, hey, let's go kill some people and get some money, we'd all go, right, okay, well, forget that. But it's never that blatant. And this is like the extreme that he uses to show the reality of what we're doing when we're pursuing gain for ourselves. Anyone else?
First one is Proverbs 8, pretty much. A lot of people recognize Proverbs as something just that stands for wisdom and knowledge, but they really actually forget the discipline. And me, myself, it says that there's wisdom, knowledge, and discipline in Proverbs 1. The discipline is what brings me wisdom and knowledge. I think that's what's most important. If we discipline ourselves, that's where we gain our wisdom and our knowledge.
Yeah. And we so hate discipline, don't we? I mean, it's just so hard to be people of discipline. Anyone else? Let's close in prayer. Father, teach us to be wise. Over these next days, weeks, months, however long this takes to go through this book, Father, I just pray that you would teach us to be wise, that you would discipline us, that you would instruct us, that you would teach us, that we would know at the end of this better your will and your way. Father, touch us, heal us. For those who tonight are longing for a dad who would instruct wisely and who would know you, for those who are longing for a mother who would teach and offer and give, Father, I just pray that in this community you would bring together those who long for that and those who have that to offer, and that you would, as you promised to do, set the lonely in families, and that we would be able to know you. Father, I praise you for the good fathers that are represented here and the good mothers who are represented here and the ones who've taken the path to wisdom. Father, bless them, give them good things, and help their words to be heard and respected and honored. Father, thank you for the command to honor our fathers and mothers. Thank you that we can do that and that we can, if all else fails, turn to you, our great father and our really good mother, the one who teaches us and instructs us. Father, thank you for who you are and what you've done. In Jesus' name, amen. You can respond by giving an offering if you brought one. I don't know where the baskets are, but they'll be somewhere. And if you need someone to pray for you, the sinner's chair is there. It's just a place where if you sit, someone will talk to you, and you can confess your own sin, the sin that's been done against you, sin in this world, just your needs, your wants. If you want someone to pray with you, go there, and someone will come and do that. And we also have bread and juice here, and I think back there. And if you know God and you know Jesus and you've given your life to him and he is in control of it, then please go and take bread and juice. And as you eat and drink it, know that Jesus' life was offered to you as a sacrifice for your foolishness, and a complete taking away of that and the effect of that, so that you can truly know God. And he made that path through his death and resurrection. We celebrate that next week. And then finally, just meditate or look at the art or spend some time reflecting and worshiping.